Have you heard about the new MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle? The MagnaGrip Pro Nozzle is the easiest, most advanced nozzle ever, protecting you from the dangers of diesel exhaust fumes. With its patented flex magnet technology, the Pro Nozzle easily attaches with one hand from a standing position, can snap on from any angle, and fits flush to the apparatus, saving a ton of space. And MagnaGrip is the only exhaust removal system that offers a true 100% seal. For free grant assistance and to learn more, go to MagnaGrip.com.
Good evening, brothers and sisters. This is Chris Bednarik, your Public Information and Technology Chair from Fools International, welcoming you to the August 8th edition of Fools Blog Talk Radio. Before we get started, I'd like to take just a few moments of silence to recognize all of our brothers and sisters who have fallen, both fire, first responders, and in the military. Thanks. And before we get on with the show, we have a few reminders from the International that I've been asked to forward along. The first, and possibly the largest, is a reminder that the Fools International Annual Convention is September 26th through the 30th in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, hosted by the Brew City Fools. Now through September 25th, registration for that event is $300 per member. With add-ons for the go-karts at $50, and I know they're getting really close to the 50-person maximum for that, so if you're interested in go-karts, I would definitely get my registration in sooner rather than later. If you have a significant other that would like to attend with you, their registration will be $50, and there will be registration at the door for $350. As a reminder, your registration covers all of the great training, networking, and brotherhood events, including the Brewers Cardinals game and tailgating on Tuesday night of the convention. If you have any questions about convention, hit up the International's website or go directly to the Brew City Fools website and social media, and we'll do our best to answer any questions you might have. Secondly, it's getting close to that time of year where our AIL accidental death and dismemberment cards are going to be sent out. As part of your membership in Fools International, you automatically get a $4,000 accidental death and dismemberment policy. There are some hoops to jump through in order to get a payout on that policy, but it is for real. It's not spam. And you don't have to send those cards in order to qualify for that coverage. Your active status in a Fools chapter and being registered on the International's database of members is enough. And the last update that I have is an address update. Our new treasurer, Dana Larkin, in Washington, asked for me to send out just one more reminder that our mailing address is no longer in Flossmoor, Illinois. The address currently is 370 Northeast Camino Drive, Suite 5, PMB number 142 in Camino Island, Washington, 98282. The post office box in Flossmoor no longer exists, so if you have anything you need to send to the International via USPS, whether that's your annual chapter dues, new membership forms, if you're not doing any of that electronically, please make sure to send those things to the new address in Washington. Without further ado, I would like to share with you my pre-recorded interview with Heather Moore, previously of the Springfield, Illinois Fire Department, and now currently the Deputy Director of the Illinois Fire Service Institute. Heather, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for taking some time out of your schedule. I know how busy you are, and we ended up having to reschedule this a few times in order to make some room to accommodate both of our schedules. And to let you know a little bit about the Fools, we are a training and tradition and fire service history centric organization. We are about promoting the brother and sisterhood of the fire service, taking care of each other, training so that we can be the best that we can be to serve those who we have sworn to protect.
And I know the Fire Service Institute has similar values, and so do you. So thanks for being on the show. Why don't you kind of introduce yourself to the folks that are going to be out there listening, maybe a little bit about where you're from, a little bit of your background.
Well, thank you. It's a privilege, an honor, and most certainly to serve in the capacity as the deputy director, that it has been an incredible journey for me. I am from Thomasville, North Carolina. So as you listen to me today and you hear a little bit of twang, it is authentic. It is who I am. And most certainly when I talk about the Illinois Fire Service Institute and or the fire service and the people that I built relationships with, that I get to call my friends, such as you, Chris, that it just oozes out of me. I did not grow up knowing that being a firefighter was an option for me. I remember it was a grade school assembly on fire prevention, and that our local fire department, I went to Fairgrove Elementary, and our local volunteer fire department did the presentation, but I did not know that it was a possibility. So I'm a little bit different in that I would say that I am a Title IX kid, in that there were opportunities that were just normal for me as far as playing in sports and the opportunities in education and all of that, that I didn't realize the totality of it until now being 50 years old and Title IX being 50 years old. And so it's just, it's an awesome experience, if you will, an awesome journey for me to be in the position that I am, to have the experiences that I've had, and to have someone say to me, where I was a assistant manager and the lady training me, her husband was a captain on the Springfield Fire Department, and said, Heather, why don't you take the firefighter test? And I was like, I don't know anything about being a firefighter. He said, oh, that's fine. He goes, just take the test. So I was naive. I didn't have fear about what do I need to know or the unknown, other than I don't know anything going in. Is that okay? Sure. So I went through the written exam, went through the physical agility exam, and I owe my training and education, if you will, from application to sports, and that there was always training and education in that to become better, that we practiced in order to compete. So there was a resonance there for me in application of potentially what being part of the fire service looked like, some sort of construct as you're entering this process. And after the first day, and when J.D. Knox came in, who was the chief at the time, I knew that I was where I was supposed to be. And what an incredible journey for me it's been in figuring out how to navigate through it, being a person of small stature, where I was very proud of when I was a firefighter, being 126 pounds, that, you know, I'm 5'6", and that, yes, you can. That my mother told me at a very young age, Heather, you decide what you want to do in life. You try. You decide what you want to do, and you figure out if you don't like it, or if you cannot compete, or if it doesn't bring you joy. You decide that, that no one else has that power over you. So that was very much what was instilled in me at a young age. And so that was a lens that I looked through. And that as I've gotten older, I realized not everyone was raised that way, that not everyone had that opportunity, that mindset, that perspective. And so it is very much, I feel, my responsibility now to make sure people are aware, all size, shapes, sex, color, that you have the opportunity, and that I want to help anyone and everyone that is interested in being a part of the fire service, in helping develop them and figuring out how to do that, how to compete, how to compete, how to be a team member, how to participate and be a part of a cohesive unit, part of the fire service at large.
That was amazing. If we could can that and put that right into our articles of association, that these are the things you need to believe to be a part of the Fools organization, I think you just nailed it. Absolutely.
But I think it's also important to understand that it's not easy, right? That there are going to be challenges. There are going to be people that push back that are not kind.
For
that
sure.
will, if you allow it to, I've tried to practice that. Is it true what they're saying? Or is it, so is it an opportunity for me to improve personally? Whether it's my education about what they're referring to, or about my ability or my capacity to improve, then that's what I should do. I can't just feel sorry for myself, because the mission that we support in the fire service collectively is too large for us to not get it right and to be the best version of who we are. That we have a responsibility to ourselves, to our family, to our fire service family, to always be in pursuit of that and realize that it's a daunting task, that it is not easy. And there are days that you will not get it right, and that you have to circle back and own your words, own your actions with people to build those relationships, to continue to train, to understand your craft, potentially understand it from an educational perspective, so that you understand the science, so then you can go apply the tactics, especially as a firefighter, as a lieutenant, as a captain, to build that cohesive unit. Then as potentially you promote through the ranks to build those crews, to build your battalion, to build your department. And to me, that is truly done with a personal relationship with your profession. No matter what your perspective, if you are volunteer, if you're paid on call, if you are with a career department, that you have a responsibility to yourself, to your family, to your fellow crew members, and to your organization, as well as to the community that you serve, that you are in pursuit of that at all times. That's our responsibility, I feel, as being part of the fire service.
Right. It's a journey. For sure. And it starts when you realize that this is what you want to do. And when you feel like that journey is over, then maybe it's time to hang it up, because like you alluded back to sports and being competitive. And I'm thinking about a little conversation we had before we started recording, where I'm not necessarily that competitive with others in a team sport way, but I'm very competitive with myself. So I'm always trying to figure out, you know, what's the next challenge? What's the next thing I can do to further my education, to make my training program a little bit better, to help out the folks that I'm training so that they can be better and move on to their next step?
It's adaptive. You know, it's the personal leadership with yourself that's adaptive leadership, that you continue to assess, be self-aware, to continue that pursuit of how do I improve? And I'm not saying you don't need to be obsessed. That's not it, because, you know, we don't need to, there's a happy medium, I think, there. But I think that initial push, whenever you become a firefighter, that you have to really dig in to create a strong foundation and also continue to maintain that personal development, not only in the fire service, but as a human being, that you can't do it in a silo, right? You can't just turn it on and off. Yes, you have responsibility whenever you show up for that emergency scene, whatever your capacity or your role is, to support and execute and support the mission that you are completing. But it's also our responsibility to be good human beings, to be kind always. That is something that we most certainly have the opportunity, that we have that choice each and every day, regardless of what is presented in front of you.
I think some people, maybe not some people, but all of us from time to time need to take a step back and remember the words that we said when we put our right hand up and swore to be a part of this profession, you know, to help others, to be there for them in their worst times. And I know it's common that sometimes we lose sight of that. We get a little calloused, a little cold-hearted, but I think it's important. Yeah. And this organization has helped me to do that for sure. Being a part of the IFSI family has helped me do that. I've had some great officers and also some not so great ones that have helped me find my lane in the fire service. And I'm sure a lot of other people can relate to that. Why did you want to get into this to begin with? It's something we need to think about sometimes.
Exactly. And I think that if you can, because we always talk about compassion fatigue, empathy fatigue within the fire service and building personal resilience. And I am so glad that the conversation has become part of everyday conversation in most fire departments. Like, I hope that we have gotten over the hump, but doesn't mean that we can rest, that we have to continue having those conversations about taking the perspective of who we're serving or our fellow firefighters that we work with, and understanding and being more curious than judgmental to understand what's going on in their life so that we can help provide support, help provide guidance. Because I want to give that back to people, because that's what I wanted as a firefighter. That's what I want in the relationships that I have within my life, that it is an ecosystem of give and take, and that we show up for each other. That doesn't mean that we don't hold each other accountable, that we have a responsibility for the organizations that we serve, as well as to the relationships that add value and meaning in our life, that we just have to stay curious and kind.
You started off young, not realizing that the fire service was really an option for you. Where do you think your path might have taken you had you not had that interaction with the Springfield Fire Department?
I think just because of how I'm wired, how I'm formed, that I would have been somewhere in the teaching, the training, and education arena, whether it's coaching, whether I'm in a middle school, junior high teaching, or a high school, that I think that's just always been a part of my DNA. And that I think that being in the fire service, it allowed me to have a continuation of the physical aspect of sports, and at the same time, that committed relationship with personal and professional development that I didn't know when I was doing it, but being 50 now and reflecting back on that, like, wow, what an opportunity. I knew it, but not as I do retrospectively now. It was just meant to be in some ways. The pieces fell in place. And I'm very lucky for having, if you will, the ability to show up, the ability to show up for the test, to not be afraid, to not have the mental constructs that I can't. So I am thankful for that, that I just, as I said, was naive and had a gift from my mother and how it helped framed how I saw the world, to be able to try to figure it out what you can do. So I think it would have been training and education. I don't know, but I'm very happy with how it did turn out.
Right. I feel like you kind of got the best of both worlds. Longtime veteran of the Springfield, Illinois Fire Department. And we met teaching classes for IFSI. Sometimes I don't necessarily care to think about how long ago that was, but it's been a couple of years. So you've been able to foster kind of both of those needs that you had. What was it like moving up through the Springfield Fire Department as a small in stature, large in heart female to get to, I'm not going to spoil the surprise where you ended your career with them, but moving up through the ranks in a male-dominated industry?
I'm sure there were moments and obstacles along the way, but they have not left an imprint in my mind. The opportunities and the successes, the generosity of people and sharing their knowledge with me, in working with me to become better. And I feel like that they wanted me to be successful too, in that I'm a part of the team, right? And so it's a yeah, you happen to be smaller, but we'll figure out your way. I remember I had a captain that if you pull off pre-connects and you throw them on your shoulder, being smaller, there's not a lot of real estate there. So to me, that was never an efficient way to deploy a pre-connect. So working with the captain, figuring out, and I would go in and take the two loops that would stick out on most pre-connects and put my arm through them. And I would always know, because as you do rig checks every morning, you know where the nozzle is. So put my arm through them, the loops, and then grabbing the nozzle and being able to go meet at the front door or wherever our point of entry was to flake out the hose, so that I wasn't wrestling with a connection point, so that it wasn't stuck between my SCBA and my back and all of that, as I had tried to overcome and figure out that that's not going to work and it's going to waste time. And, you know, seconds count on the fire ground. So are you the most efficient that you can be? And so he helped work with me so that I understood and never made me feel less than just because I wasn't 6 foot and 200 pounds and could use brute force to accomplish everything. I remember when we were doing a training evolution at Springfield that was a coordinated training evolution with other rigs in town, that a battalion chief didn't like how I pulled off hose. And he wanted to somewhat micromanage how that happened. And I appreciated that my captain went to bat for me. They had choice words and went off to each other. And he said, we were faster than any crew here. What's wrong with that? And that it was efficient, it was safe, and it was a smart way for me to accomplish the in-state task. You know, that's one of those imprints that's, it could have been bad, but it was good that he stood up for me. And that's how, when I was always on any rig, that I would deploy hose and never had any issue throughout the course of my career, other than that one time. It's figuring out your way, but you have to be resolved to and committed to figuring that out. Just because you're different doesn't mean that you can't adapt and overcome to figure out how you do your work.
We're all working towards the same mission, the same endpoint. And how we get there is going to look a little bit different for everyone, whether it's based on our physical capabilities, our training, the way our departments are set up, the way our rigs are set up. I am a believer that there are multiple ways to skin that cat, as long as at the end of the day, we get to where it is we needed to go. In the whole scheme of things, you very recently retired from the Springfield Fire Department to take the position of Deputy Director at the State Fire Academy. You talk a little bit about how that transition's going, and kind of how you started at IFSI and how you kind of worked up to, hey, I think I want to be kind of in charge of this operation.
I started at IFSI in 2007. I started in teaching in the trench rescue program. And that was always and always will be a love for me, that it is just something that made sense. And then I also taught within the structural collapse program and just spent a lot of time working with incredible people and learned how to do so many things and how to look at things, how to look further than just the task that was in front of you, so that you, as you move up in an organization, obviously you got to keep your head up more than down, just so that you see further along and understand and can predict what's next. So I appreciate those moments, those relationships, and most certainly the transfer of information and skills and capacity, whether it's physically doing the work and also transferring the capacity to others, that information and those skills to first responders throughout the state of Illinois. It was one of those things, like, I feel most certainly that I am fortunate in that my time at the Illinois Fire Service Institute as being an instructor enhanced my capacity with the Springfield Fire Department, not only as a firefighter, but as a company officer. And then as in 2018, whenever Chief Riney was named chief of the Springfield Fire Department and asked me to be part of his command staff and serve as the division chief of training and education for the Springfield Fire Department. It was just an opportunity that I think other people saw for me, if that makes sense, because if you know me, I have a strong work ethic and that I am committed to whatever it is that I have been tasked to do, whatever project that I am responsible for completion, that I just didn't see that. But other people saw and say, how did you not see that? And it was just, I was surprised and very thankful with the opportunity. And it gave me time to figure out how to update our policies and procedures. And a lot of people say, oh my gosh, like, but I'm telling you, that is an essential component to any organization and most certainly a fire department, that it establishes the rules of engagement, because our responsibility, we drive around $750,000, million plus apparatus, and that we are responsible for 3, 4, 2 crew members to so that they go home the next day. But it's our responsibility as formal leaders within the organization to provide that framing through up-to-date policies and procedures, and not just pen on paper, information on paper, but providing that training and education to set those expectations so that it becomes codified. It becomes part of the organization and how you function and operate. That is a necessity, because if we don't have that and if we don't provide the training and education on that, we cannot adapt to the fire ground, to the emergency scene, for the things that pop up that may not be predictable, that are the unknowns, that we are better prepared to maintain calm, to maintain command and control. And it is people watching organized chaos, but everyone knows their role and they know the responsibility, and then they know when they need to ask for more resources, more personnel, all of those things, that it creates the culture of the organization, I feel, if done right. As much as that may sound like a daunting task, I loved it. I loved it because I wanted that framing and that empowerment spread throughout the organization so that the expectations were set. And so then also that you can build your training program that is bedded, if you will, has its foundation within the policies and procedures of your organization.
I agree with that. I was a part of writing a lot of policies and rewriting policies, and I still am. But I am also a firm believer that that you do have to write it down and you have to train on it so that people understand what the expectation is, and give them whether your department calls them SOPs or SOGs or whatever it is they call them, that lays the ground rules. And then when you're comfortable with that, it gives you hopefully the training and the knowledge to be able to work outside of that proverbial box when the need arises. Because what do we always say in this job? You know, you can what if it to death. You have that student that comes through a class of, well, what if this and what if that? It's like, well, we're going to give you that base training so that if all those what ifs happen, you have the knowledge and the skills to be able to figure it out and work around those obstacles as they're thrown at you.
I think one of the misnomers that is undervalued, underemphasized, and somewhat maybe underappreciated in the fire service at large is that, yes, we're called firefighters, we're called first responders, but we are paid to make decisions. We are paid to make decisions when no one else can. They don't know what to do. And so it's our responsibility within the organization to provide that decision-making framing based on updated policies, procedures, an updated training program that is implemented, that it is part of the culture that supports the members doing their work so that they can respond when it exceeds what is written on paper, because there is muscle memory that is allowing them to do the things that are known and then to use their mind to think about and how to address the things that are unknown to deal with the uncertainty.
I haven't worked on a department yet that had any kind of a standing order on what to do when you respond to the house in the middle of the night because the furnace is making a strange noise or one of their pipes is leaking. That's one of the things that I think it really blows the minds of a lot of the cadets that I talk to is, yeah, we train on all this great fire stuff and response and EMS, but we're also the cat in the tree people.
Yes.
Granted, I've never been to the cat in the tree, but kind of see where I'm going. And it's, you have to have that all hazards approach, I guess, to everything.
Yes. Birds and trees.
Birds. Absolutely.
Personal birds of people that are pets that somehow escaped and you have to help get that back. Yeah. The mission has grown tremendously in the 21 and a half years that I spent with the Springfield Fire Department just there. And the calls that we would go to in 2000 versus the calls when I left in 2021, that it's changed and it continues to grow. And that we just have to continue to grow as a fire service in order to meet the community's needs and their request.
And I know you said that you're detail oriented and your work ethic. Anytime that I have had the opportunity to be in either of your offices, whether it was when you were still on Springfield or now down at the Fire Service Institute, as soon as you walk into a Heather Moore office, you know you are in a place where work happens. There are whiteboards, there are stand-up desks, and it is just, man, there is stuff all over the place, but it's organized. And you can tell that from an outsider's point of view, there's some big stuff going on in here. And it might be your grocery list. I don't pay that much attention to what you're writing, but it's all out there. It's like, this is not a place to relax. And I'm sure that happens from time to time, but it's a place to go to make the fire service a better place.
I try. Being organized and having a plan, and it doesn't mean that the plan won't pivot, but if you do that and you communicate that plan, then you empower others. It's you, the further you go up in an organization, obviously, I don't do as much tactically, if you will, or technically as I used to, that I have to keep my head up. I have to keep looking forward and understand how all the processes, how all the systems connect together and capture inefficiencies and address those. And then also to transfer that information and that knowledge to create the next generation so that one day maybe when I'm on a beach or whatever it is, or just sitting in a recliner and hanging out, or that I do in my free time, that you left an imprint, you left a roadmap, you made it better. You have no direct control over what happens after you leave, but I want to most certainly leave a framing and a reference and a how-to and all of those things, and that it's also replicated in the people that I led, that I served, the organizations that I've been a part of, that you gave them the framing to continue to move forward. That's what my hope is. And that one of the things too in my office is just so that as you move up in an organization too, there's more responsibilities and you only know so much, if you will, because I don't get to know the granular level of detail that I once did as a program manager or an instructor. And that's why it's so important to build those relationships and trust with the subject matter experts, with the instructors, with the program managers and the program directors, that they are leading the charge in the doing and the execution and the accomplishment of those. That's part of the whole ecosystem, if you will, in my mind, the relationships and the transfer of knowledge and always continuation of becoming better. That's to me leadership. That's our responsibility, even if it's a formal position that you hold or being the best version of who you are. It is that ecosystem of relationships, your personal knowledge, skills, and abilities, and the continuation and the development and the people that you have in your life. And also, I'm very thankful to have, I would say most people would say my office is not professional, that they could look at it that way. But my office is a place of inspiration also for me, and not only at IFSI in Springfield, but also at home, in that there are photos of all the people that I've worked with or people that have inspired me that I have no idea truly who they are. For example, like Pat Summitt or Kay Yao, that was the women's basketball coach from North Carolina State, or authors that I've read their content and has inspired me so that I continue to be fed, if that makes sense, whenever you have a moment or an issue throughout the day, and maybe you get a little bit of self-pity and you're upset, and then you can look back and see the people that you're serving, the mission that you're upholding, that inspires you, that's why I do it. That's why I do it. That it's understanding your why. What is your center of gravity that allows you, that inspires you, that helps facilitate that energy, inspiration within you to continue to move forward? That's what my office is, that I need that in order to continue with all of the myriad of things that I'm responsible for and have the privilege to be a part of here at the Institute.
You kind of segued right into, and I want to circle back around to this whole idea that someday you're going to retire and relax, because I have a hard time picturing that. I have a hard time picturing it for myself. I have a hard time picturing it for you. But you talked about all these people that have influenced you, that you found inspiration from. I'm going to kind of focus more just on the Fire Service Institute. Not that there haven't been those folks in your life outside, whether family, friends, or members of the Springfield Fire Department. But as the State Academy, and I have been a part of that family for a long time, and I have traveled around with some of our road shows, we pull instructors from all over the state, and we have arguably some of the best instructors in the fire service nationally. I would like to think that everyone that works for IFSI would have that same sentiment. Because we pull from such a diverse group of people, from Southern Illinois to Northern, from city of Chicago, Springfield, all the way down to
Metropolis.
Like, yeah, Metropolis. Yeah, we pull from a lot of different backgrounds, from farmers to inner city people, different races, different genders, different specialties. How would you describe, and both for instructors and students, not just the education that they can receive, whether it's more formalized, whether it's practicals, whether it's a course that leads to a state certification, but also the networking opportunities that are available to people who are either part of the IFSI family officially or people that just come down to visit for a week as a student?
I think that if you have the mindset of, when you're an instructor, yeah, I'm supposed to be prepared. I'm supposed to know the curriculum to the course that I am providing training and education on. But there's also, you have to be open to our students and learning from them, from their perspective. Because also, as I'm older and kids coming in and the intelligence that they have, we have to be open to it. Yes, there are standards, there are expectations, but we cannot dismiss or devalue differences that our student population, our instructor population bring in. We have to capture that, because that diversity, that inclusion of something that is different than we are, makes us that much more adaptable and stronger, able to pivot, to understand, so that we can connect with someone else that's going to be in our future that we are working with our crew, or that we are providing training and education, that you just have to be open to what else, be curious about it. And then also, I think there's a transition that we get so used to in the fire service of dealing with everything like it's an emergency, that we have to watch ourselves and I think be mindful of our capacity. And I know that I've had these interactions at home with my wife, Sonny, that not everything's an emergency, that sometimes it's just slowing down enough and showing up to listen to the other, that there's opportunity for us to learn and to transfer that, for that to become part of who you are and also part of your transfer of knowledge to others when you do that, that we have to slow down. And I appreciate the opportunities with being an instructor that if you look at it and understand, yes, you're training people to respond to emergencies, but when you are training people, it's your responsibility to show up and be open to learning as well. And I think that that is something that we try to replicate within the Institute. And obviously with any organization, there's opportunities to improve, but it is part of who we are as an organization that our instructional staff are subject matter experts, and they are incredible human beings with a litany of experience and knowledge in their subject matter, if you will. But we have that opportunity as instructors to meet our students where they are in order to train and educate them to go serve in their communities. But we only do that with showing up with curiosity.
Even as my time as a training officer, when I was on the Chicago Heights Fire Department, we would tend to send a lot of our folks to the same place for training. And that same place was in the same division. So you saw a lot of the same instructors from the same division all the time. And I would always push them to take a class, whether it was through IFSI or one of the other academies or another local or even not so local fire department or a seminar, to just get out of that microcosm of where we were in and learn something new and bring it back, that we're all out there fighting the same struggle. We're all out there doing the same thing.
It's not a competition with others. The opportunity that exists is to capture those insights, that information, and to replicate it within your organization. But I challenge everyone, get outside of your sandbox. That I'm sure your organization is extraordinary. I'm sure it is. But there are tons of other people that are out there, opportunities that exist for you to go find out something else. Go look at a different way of doing things, whether it's in California or New York or Florida or Texas. Get outside of your sandbox if you can. Most certainly now with the capabilities of virtual learning and different things that are put on all throughout weeks now through different entities as well, that gives you that access, that opportunity to grow your mind in ways that we have not as a fire service embraced until COVID, until we were forced to stand down and to limit our interaction, you know, with training, and then standing up different virtual learning management systems and virtual online connectivity capabilities to be able to transfer that type of education, if you will, and information. That accessibility, I think, has bolstered our capacity as first responders, not only in the United States, but globally.
For sure. And maybe virtual learning isn't for everybody. And I know there's plenty of naysayers out there, but boy, does it fill a need. You know, people, especially in the paid on call and volunteer community, that are just trying to serve their community, trying to still have a family life. They got kids, they're trying to further their education. So maybe a Tuesday night, a Zoom session with a live instructor actually instructing that fits their schedule finally gets them to the place where they need to be to further their career, to help them train the rest of the members on their department. So yeah, maybe it's not for everybody, but I think we got pushed 10 years ahead, kicking and screaming at first for sure. But now we're doing this interview on Zoom today, probably a month before it'll air, but that's okay. Schedules are schedules. Man, when all of this first started, nobody knew what Zoom was. Nobody knew what WebEx or any of the other platforms that are really out there that have really, I think, done a great job of bringing us back together.
Exactly. I think it's changed the fire service capabilities. And that doesn't mean that should take the place of face-to-face, full contact training. It is just a component. It is a method to provide education and information that supports the training execution and implementation.
Let's circle back around to this whole idea that there is a point in your day or your week where you relax. What does that look like for Heather?
So I have a 7-year-old Wolfhound Terrier Schnauzer mix that we adopted 6 years ago. And he is the epitome of relaxation, just joy, happy, and being present. So what a gift in Sonny and I's life to have found Walter, for Walter to have found us, that he is incredible. And so he meets me every day when I come home from work with his tail wagging and brings me one of his toys. And usually I spend, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes. And that's how I, because as I've talked about, my work ethic and my attention to detail and all of the things, and just trying to keep, if you will, all the balls in the air. I don't like to spin plates because then they break. So say that all the balls in the air and trying to transition to being present at home, because it's very important to me that I show up to be my best self for Sonny and Walter. So it's spending some time with him. And the other thing that I do to help transition to be home so that I'm present is I spend about 10 minutes in my favorite chair in my office upstairs at home, sitting in the dark and thinking about my breath. And if you'd have told me 5, 10, 20 years ago that I would need to do that to be a better me, I'd have probably laughed at you, because I had the energy, if you will, to outrun and to keep pushing forward. But now as I get older and don't have quite the 16 hours of energy that I used to at that capacity, that I have to honor myself and figure out what tactics work best for me. The other thing that I like to do is we have a brick patio and just hanging out. And it's been a, knock on wood, mild summer so far. So I've been able to spend a lot of time out on the brick patio. We have some friends. One of the reasons we look forward to moving to Champaign is we had some friends of ours for the last 15 years, the relationship with IFSI and the relationships with them, and being able to spend time with them, to just go in a Jeep with the top down and go for a ride and take the dogs and just have nothing in your mind. It's a great resetter. Where when I was younger, I used to push myself physically and mentally relentlessly. It was just part of my craving to understand, to know, to be better, to meet the responsibilities that I was afforded. And now I know that there need to be breaks in that, and to honor and to have stillness and quiet. And that may sound a little woo-woo, but I'm just going to say it's working. It's working. It makes me better. And so until it stops working, those are things that I do now to somewhat relax. I like to read. I love to read. I can't read fast enough. There's not enough time, but I try to read about an hour a day so that I am gleaning information from experts, from people that have had experiences, that there is wisdom to obtain from other people's work. And sometimes don't always hit that mark. There's Audible, there's podcasts such as this that can add value and glean insight that we can capture in those times, if you will, because a lot of us probably spend a lot of time in cars or commuting, or hopefully most people get up in the morning and take a shower. So I usually have a podcast on in the morning that's adding value, not just noise, if that makes sense. That is somewhat on a topic that I'm interested in, most certainly leadership and how to be a better person. And then it's my responsibility each day to embody that, to practice it, that it's not just words, it's the actions and behaviors that you contribute each and every day that helps facilitate that growth. And I've tried to honor too that those moments of stillness and silence. I have a yard now. I used to live, my wife and I lived in town Edinburgh, that is about 1,200 people. Now, when I was on the Springfield Fire Department, we lived in Edinburgh in an old firehouse that was from 1902, ordinary construction, a great place to live, but we didn't have a yard. And so now that we live in Champaign, they have a nice fenced-in yard for Walter. And so there are things that you want to change when you move into a house. Our house is awesome and great, but doing yard work, I have found, I love it. I really do. The meticulous nature of it, just different things. But I find that there's a lot of stillness in that for me personally. And there are a lot of gifts that come to me, if this makes sense, that when you're still and when you are working on a project that you are physically doing, that's where I find inspiration. A lot of great ideas come to me. It's because I give myself those moments and that opportunity for the clearing of all the balls in the air, all the responsibilities and all that stuff. And if you can trust that, the answers, the inspiration, the potential in other things, it'll show up. It'll come to you. That you just, right. I can't push like I used to. I've just got to honor and it'll come to me. And that's one of the, another thing that I've appreciated about the transition from being on a fire department and being at IFSI is that the fire department's nonstop. And most certainly as a staff chief, that you have a phone with you at all times and you are on the ready at all times to answer the call because there's someone that needs an answer on the other side of that. I am thankful that IFSI closes so that it is not an emergency response organization and that it does afford me that time that there's not an emergency on the other side of the phone so that I can disconnect from that phone.
So I think we covered a lot of ground. We're creeping up on an hour. I know you have things to do today and I don't want to take up any more of your time, but what's going on at the Institute right now? Do you want to plug any programs, any big special events that are coming up here over the summer or going into the early fall?
So Chris, whenever you and I started teaching at IFSI, there was kind of a downtime in the mm-hmm. summer and in the winter and all kinds of things. Like that's usually not the case anymore. We're full tilt all around the year. I contribute that to our instructional staff, the requests from departments, the awareness, the outreach that we have that people have absorbed and put into practice that training has to go on all the time. And so that I'm thankful that we are able to meet those needs and those requests that exist throughout the year. One of the things with our relationship with OSFM, funding that's provided to IFSI is the Basic Operations Firefighter Blended Course that will be starting up again in August. It's an 18-week program. There's 9 weekend practical dates. And if you are a first responder in Illinois, that is grant funded and available to you. So that when you successfully complete that course, then you will receive Basic Operations Firefighter, Office of State Fire Marshal certification. So that's just a program that we've had going on now for a little right at 3 years, and that has added tremendous value to our volunteer firefighters throughout the state. But just like anything else, we'll have an academy that starts up in September. We'll have special operations, fire officer courses. The full gamut of schedule is gearing up and getting ready to go. Probably for a couple weeks this summer, we'll be resetting the grounds, doing some maintenance and things that need to be done that we have opportunity, the opening to address. But most often, it won't stop. And I'm thankful for that because that means that people are out becoming better. They're becoming better at their profession, at their craft, their relationship with this wonderful fire service. That's a good thing. There's not a lot of opportunity to rest.
If you have questions about programs at the State Fire Academy, you can go to fsi.illinois.edu. Check out their great website. They just overhauled it not that long ago. So there's a lot of great stuff on there, including some Team IFSI resources. If you want to do a ladder drill, you can go to those resources and there's lesson plans and PowerPoints and all kinds of great stuff. So some really great resources that are available, even if you're not looking to necessarily take a class.
Exactly. And depending on departments and their training management, if they're using a learning management system, Vector Solutions, obviously take them, upload them, use them as activities. There's videos, lesson plans, all of it's there. And it's free and available to you. Even if you're in California or the state of Washington, wherever you are, take it and use it. And we're working on updating those all the time and adding to them in the different disciplines that exist in order to support our fire service mission better. That is centric to firefighting now, but we will enhance that in the future to be inclusive of company fire officer, to include special operations, technical rescue awareness, that we know that we need to bolster that just because it, the accessibility and the necessity of those types of training.
I just want to touch on one other little thing with you real quick, if we can. I think when a lot of people think of the Illinois Fire Service Institute, they think of just a fire training academy. I'm going to go take an officer class. I'm going to go take a firemanship class for certification or otherwise. But being tied to and campus kind of adjacent to the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, there's a lot of research that goes on with firefighting as well. Do you want to kind of clue us in on maybe some of the projects that they're working on right now or some things that maybe they're just finishing up?
Yes. So there are two parts of our mission that some people don't necessarily know, that we provide training, education, information, and research. And that information component is that we have a library that is staffed, that is waiting for you, that they are almost like a response agency waiting for your call. What is it that you need as a first responder, whether you're studying for a promotional exam, whether you're taking a course at IFSI, if you are working on an associate's degree, a bachelor, a master's degree, they are waiting to help you research and find that information to support and meet your request. No other state fire training academy has. The only library that I would say maybe a little bit better and has been around a little bit longer is the National Fire Academy's library in Emmitsburg, Maryland. But it is an amazing opportunity that exists for you, that if you don't know those promotional exams, if you need books that you're reading to support that process for you, they're available. And that those books or CDs, the books on CD, if you're traveling and it's for personal professional development, those exist for you to check out as well, and that we partner with your local libraries where we will transfer it there and you can pick it up in your hometown or a town next to you that's available, those resources are. The other arm of our mission is research. We are fortunate enough to be associated with the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, but our research department is unique in that it is comes from the perspective and the world of firefighting and understanding the environment in firefighting from the IDLH to the biomechanics of our gear, to the deconning of our gear, to how a lot of you have heard different research and information about cardiovascular health. That came from the Illinois Fire Service Institute. The deconning, the shower within an hour, the proper way to take your gear off so that you limit how you contaminate yourself after being in a fire. All of those videos are available. Decon buckets are available for your department if you have not received those within the state of Illinois so that you have that capability to decon after a fire. That we provide that to you through a relationship with OSFM and MABUS, that we still have those available. That there are a lot of things that they're working on virtual learning and how to make decisions with virtual learning and wearing the Oculus and how our bodies respond to that, that it doesn't differentiate between actual live fire that you're participating in versus that virtual Oculus technology and how you can make better decisions without putting yourself in harm's way, that we can use that as part of our training and education component. Love for you to come see us. We're here in Champaign, Illinois, 11 Gurdy Drive. It is an extraordinary place. It is a first responders playground. So come see us.
Heather, thank you so much for spending so much of your morning with me today. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for sharing yourself with the fire service. And just as importantly, thanks to Sani for sharing you with us.
Oh, yes. She's the best.
She is. That's another thing.
I hope that everyone out there, or eventually that you find that person in your life that makes you better, that holds you accountable, that it is most certainly any successes I've had, any outward whatever I have received. Sani has most certainly been my strongest advocate, been my hardest critic. She's made me better. And I can only hope that for everyone out there, that you have that tribe of people, or most certainly that person in your life that adds value and makes you the best version of you, the best human being that you can, that's my wish for everyone and my hope, that you're not only a hell of a firefighter, that you also are one hell of a person. And that happens whenever you are able to recognize and have that relationship with another that just makes you that much better, that much more enhanced, better version of you.
Well, I hope everyone enjoyed my chat with Heather as much as I did. I just want to thank her one more time for spending some time out of her day to chat with us and share some of her insight on the fire service. If you would like to reach out to Heather, or if you're interested in anything going on at the Fire Service Institute, you can find them on the web at fsi.illinois.edu. And if you're trying to keep up with things going on at the International, follow us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And you can find us at foolsinternational.com. Thanks for spending some time with me. Until we meet again, this is Chris Bednarik, your Public Information and Technology Chair. Look forward to seeing you again.